Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out. Indecision. Overthinking. Second-guessing every choice you make. In. Plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out. Beige on beige on beige. Ugh. In. Knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
If you have health insurance, you might be able to see a personal dietitian for $0 out of pocket. Nourish connects you with a dietitian that fits your needs, covered by your insurance. Nourish accepts hundreds of insurance plans, and 94% of patients pay $0 out of pocket. Meet with your dietitian online and message them anytime through the Nourish app. With hundreds of five-star reviews from real patients, you know you're in good hands. Find your dietitian at usenourish.com. That's usenourish.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Orioles lose last night 4-3. Looks like they've lost Zach Eflin for at least a couple of weeks. Back at it today. Could win the series. First time this season they would win a series if they can get it done. Dean Kramer against Brandon Fought. 3:40 Diamondbacks. Orioles birds off tomorrow and then back home this weekend for the Blue Jays. Ravens have the 27th pick in the NFL draft. 11 overall here to talk about that. From The Athletic, he's on the Window Nation guest hotline. Let's welcome into the program Nick Baumgartner. Nick, first of all, good morning. Welcome to Baltimore with Vinny and Annie.
Good morning. How are you guys?
Doing all right. Before we get to your mock draft and what the Ravens shouldn't do with 11 picks, should they trade and all that fun stuff. What about the Maryland dudes and quite an impressive crew of prospects for the Terps, Ty Felton, Jordan Phillips, among others. Who was the highest rated, as you see it, Maryland prospect, and how many Terps could possibly get drafted here in 2 weeks or so?
I think I really like Jordan Phillips. You know, I was at the Shrine Bowl, and I guess it was end of January there, and he was probably the best player there, I would think. I mean, he's a little short on the arms and didn't test maybe as well as some would have liked, but he's really young still, you know, and was just, I mean, when you turn the tape on, he has got some dominance to him that I don't think you see from everybody in this class. So this is an outstanding defensive tackle class, right? So it's going to be interesting to see sort of where he goes. I think he's definitely a guy who could be, you know, somewhere in round three, maybe even round two if a team really, you know, really loves him. You mentioned Felton, too. I think he's another guy that it's going to be a little bit maybe split on him. I like him a lot. I think a lot, some teams, I think he's a little thin, at about a little north of 180 pounds, whatever that was. But he's a sub-4.4 guy who was great in the air. You know, Maryland did have a really good group this year overall. Those two guys are my favorites at the top there. So we'll see how it goes. But I feel like they had some more talent this year than we've seen in the past couple of years anyway.
Hey, Nick, when I was in the NFL, every kid had to work out. You know, nowadays, a lot of kids, at least first round, they don't test, they don't time, they don't jump, they don't do anything.
Yeah, I don't like it. I'd rather go back to the old days. I think you're having, what's going on here is twofold. Number one, all that GPS data that comes out nowadays, which is all controlled by the colleges, right? And a lot of these NFL teams don't trust it completely anymore. But what you see a lot of times is if a guy, a receiver, something like this, hit 21, 22 on the GPS during a game, he'll just say, hey, this is my speed, you know, 21 miles an hour, 22 miles an hour. I don't need to do the 40, blah, 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 all this sort of thing. But what you end up seeing, though, is guys that, you know, didn't do that still try to hide behind it, and then that's trickled down even further, you know, after last year when we saw a couple of those prospects, you know, at the top, Caleb Williams, Marvin Harrison, they didn't do anything. They didn't measure there. They didn't do any medicals there. So I think you're seeing a lot of agents right now with top-end prospects, you know, trying to play the game a little bit more And that is unfortunately seeping down into prospects who are not top end and maybe think that they are. And, you know, one that comes to mind is Kenneth Grant, the kid from Michigan, who's an awesome athlete, but needed to test at the combine and didn't because I don't think he was in great shape. And then he goes to Michigan's pro day and disappoints with his testing. So some of this stuff, I just think these guys, you know, they've been told forever some of this stuff is overblown, but it's not overblown in the standpoint of if you get invited to the combine, you're there to compete. And I think that there's still a ton of teams that would rather take a guy that wants to compete than one that wants to hide. And I think that that's something that shouldn't be overlooked.
All right, when we're looking at the Ravens at 27, Nick, in your mock drafts, what do you have for them? Because I see them either safety, corner, pass rusher, or an O-lineman.
Yeah, there's a couple of different ways they could go there, obviously. And there's, you know, Donovan Jackson, the kid from Ohio State, the guard tackle, comes up a lot for me when I go down there. I think I've given him to the Ravens before. But also, Malachi Starks ends up being the guy that I go back to so much, it seems like, right? I think he and Kyle Hamilton could be just, I mean, an unreal duo back there. I loved the Kyle Hamilton pick when they made that. There was a lot of people that didn't, and I thought that was extremely smart and forward thinking. The Ravens always take the best player available, and almost always works out for them. And I think if they get into that situation again where it's, you know, you're down there with a couple guys, maybe it's a tackle that you kind of like but don't love, and then you've got a guy like Stark sitting there, that he's the guy that I always go back to because I just feel like if you put him in that defensive backfield with the guys they already have, you've got so much versatility already. Adding a guy that can also be really versatile and is just extremely smart with terrific ball skills. Anybody who plays that long and that much for Kirby Smart in a defensive backfield is ready to go. And he just feels like a Raven to me. Like the Ravens are one of my favorite teams to watch draft. They always take what I deem to be the best player, regardless of what the positional value, you know, ends up saying one or the other. And they almost always seem to make it work as long as the guy's tough. And so I think that that's a good spot for them. To maybe get, you know, you could address the offensive line, but I really keep going back to Starks. I feel like he would be a really fun player there and a good fit.
Now, how about if Starks and Emenwari are both there?
Yeah, that's tougher because I think Emenwari is the better athlete. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously, he's got the high end potential, all that sort of thing. Can be, you know, maybe even more versatile than Malachi, and that's tricky because I also think that you're looking at, you got two giant safeties there. If you end up with him and Hamilton,
6'4",
are they too similar? Is that something that they would be afraid of there? I don't know. I also don't know if I'd want to overthink that because Emenwari is such a terrific athlete. He's probably the best pure athlete in the class, just in terms of testing and everything else. Starks though, didn't have his best year last year, but is still a better football player. So that'd be a tough one. That'd be tougher than probably people think.
Now, with a lot of the pass rushers and stuff, you know, getting down to 27, how many of the pass rushers character-wise are going to be off the board?
So I think by the time the Ravens go, I think it'll be Carter, Jalen Walker, Shamar Stewart, Mike Green, Mikael Williams, and I think Easy Raku from Boston College might also be gone.
I like him a lot.
Yeah, I like him a lot too. He was terrific at the combine. Talk about a guy that wanted to compete. He went out there and had a great three cone, had great interviews, all that good stuff. The one guy that people can't quite figure out where to land on is James Pierce. Well, Shamar Stewart, I think, is going to be off the board by the time they go to 27. But James Pierce, the kid from Tennessee, who's got the sub 4.5 40 at about 250 pounds, was just a terrific edge rusher only, really. He didn't do much against the run, but, I mean, coming off the edge and bending and cornering and that sort of thing, he's one of the best in the class. However, there are, you know, we'll call them character concerns with how he practices, how he handles himself. A lot of scouts have talked about, you know, Tennessee staff got really frustrated with him. I think Tennessee's tried to downplay that some, but that was all over the place in Indianapolis. That, you know, Pierce was if there's one guy in the class that's probably a top 25 talent who might fall because of attitude, it could be Pierce. You know, sometimes that can get overblown. And, you know, if you're a team like Baltimore, who I think does a great job of, like we just talked about, filling their roster with sometimes you guys that can take care of some of these young guys that can help them come along. You know, maybe if you feel like you've got that situation under control, then I think Pierce could be a terrific addition there if he's still on the board. He would be the best one available, I think, him or Easy Raku if he falls, which could happen. But I also think he might be gone by then.
Now, how do you have the quarterback stacking up?
Yeah, so I got Ward 1. I think that that's pretty much in line with everybody else. That's been that way for quite a while. I think he's number one by a good bit. And Shador would be number two. I would go Tyler Shuck from Louisville at three, and then Jackson Dart and Jalen Milroe from Alabama there would round out my top five. With Shador, I feel like, for me, Shador is closer to Dart and Shuck than he is to Cam Ward, if that makes any sense. Like, I think I'd have Cam Ward probably as, like, my 12th, 13th best prospect in this class. And Shador would be, he might be top 30, but it would be close, right? So I think Shador is a first-round-ish player. I think the rest of them are probably second-round guys for the most part, or day two guys anyway would call it. But nobody after Ward, and I even have this question a little bit with Ward. I just don't know if there's anybody in this class that could walk into a really bad situation and really help them immediately, you know, or at least keep themselves afloat the way that we've seen from some of the top guys in recent years. I'm not sure that we have a guy in this class that stacks up with the top couple that we saw last year.
Nick Baumgartner from The Athletic, Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan, talking about the draft. First round starts in 15 days. Real quick for you, Nick, running back Ashton Jeanty appears to be the number one guy, and it looks like running back drafting them in the first round is back in vogue. Who's the other guy or two that could come right in as a rookie, depending on scheme, I guess, and make an immediate impact to whatever team takes them?
Yeah, Omarion Hampton is the first one that comes to mind, the kid from North Carolina, another really young player, a junior, who was terrific for the last 2 years anyway there. I think he had more than 3,000 yards the last 2 years and was awesome after contact. He's closer to Ashton Jeanty than a lot of people think. I think that it's a little bit like the conversation around Bijan Robinson, Jahmyr Gibbs from a couple of years ago, when so many people focused on Bijan and forgot about Gibbs. You know, I think Hampton could end up easily being a first-round pick in this class. He's another three-down back. You don't have to take him off the field. I think he works in any scheme. He can go inside or outside. He's got speed to make things happen. And then the other guy I would mention there, too, that could maybe even sneak in there would be Caleb Johnson, the kid from Iowa. I think he was just outstanding at 224 as a zone rusher with really good vision and everything else, and contact balance. So a ton of running backs this year that are going to be really good players. I think there could be about 30 that are drafted, which is a ton.
How many more mock drafts before the real draft for you, Nick?
Hopefully, like, maybe one, and then we're done.
Nick Baumgartner, The Athletic. Nick, we appreciate the time. We'll talk to you after the draft and get your opinion on how the other teams did and all that fun stuff.
Thanks, Nick.
All right, guys. Take care.
Nick Baumgartner from The Athletic, Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan. Before we go, we got the whip around coming up next. Rest in peace, Vicky Brick, local basketball standout, CEO of Brick Body. She played college hoops at Maryland for Chris Weller in the late 90s, ovarian cancer, passing away. Local college basketball standout, or high school basketball standout, who went to Maryland when, you know, Chris Weller, the program's kind of teetering a little bit. She stayed home, built a big business, well-known throughout the area. So rest in peace, Vicky Brick, and condolences and prayers to the Brick family.
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for a limited time and subject to change. Max one offer per account.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
The obsessive killing of Dorothy Stratton, the real-life murder that inspired Twin Peaks. These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.
Vinny and Haney's Whip Around.
Every sport, every game,
everything. Brought to you by Box Hill Pizzeria and Crab Cakes. Best crab cakes in Harford County.
All right. Yesterday, men's college basketball, Maryland related. Of course, Houston choked. Florida won the national title. I did see some guy, because I don't get it. Even when I was younger, I wouldn't have done these sorts of things, like tear up my own city. Nothing says we're champions more than burning police cars and ripping signs off of walls. Yeah. Well, some cement head, and hopefully his head was of cement, jumped on a light pole and fell. And had to be stretchered away from the festivities.
That's the same thing that happened with the Eagles, wasn't it?
Name a championship.
Yeah.
Some dope gets hurt, celebrate. Nolan, you're a young guy. If the Orioles win the World Series, and I know you're waiting for that, what are you burning? What are you jumping on? Like when Maryland won the national title in 02, they were tearing down College Park. What are you doing? What kind of destructive?
Tear down College Park when they beat Duke in the middle of January. But no, I'm not setting anything on fire.
Right. You jumping on light poles or festive with the masses?
Hey, those natty bows catch up with you. You never know. The moment strikes you.
Anywho, for Maryland, the men, they finished ninth in the final AP poll. First time since 2002, they finished in the top 10, finished number four. Of course, Maryland would go in to win a national championship, so bleep your poll. We got the trophy. 2020, they finished 12th, the what-if team. In 2015, Mello Trimble's freshman year, they finished 12th. And yet, lefty had teams finishing in the top 10 that didn't even get to the NCAA tournament. But that's another story for another day. Andre Mills transfers from Texas A&M to Maryland. 6'4 guard, 4-star recruit. Coming out of high school, red-shirted. So it's five. Maryland now has five players.
Nice. Just don't get a foul.
Just don't get in foul trouble. Correct. You get through 40, and you'll be a little tired. But let's get through it. But Andre Mills, welcome to College Park. There's a little Terps hoop news for you. NBA last night, Indiana over the Wiz, 104-98. I was watching some of this. And Washington was actually up double digits on a couple of occasions, even into the second half, but fell short. Pascal Siakam, 24-10-3 for the Indiana Pacers. Bob Carrington, Baltimore, 13 points, 4 boards, 4 assists. There's big upside with that kid for sure. Memphis beat Charlotte, 124-100. Ja Morant had 28. Santi Aldama, Loyola Greyhound, 11 points, 3 boards, 2 assists, 2 steals. Cleveland beat Chicago, 135-113. Darius Garland had 28. Donovan Mitchell didn't play. With the win, by the way, Cleveland clinched the top spot in the East. And they're still 2 games ahead of Oklahoma City, I believe, or chasing OKC for the number 1 overall seed. If they meet in the finals, one obviously would have home court over the other. Sticks. Jalen Smith got the start last night because Chicago kind of benched everybody. 13 points, 10 boards, 2 assists. Kevin Huerter didn't play. Rest day, and he's battling a wrist, I believe. But this happened, speaking of Maryland basketball, last night, first ever for this kid.
That's the next Big Ten is on the court.
That's right. Jameer Young is one of them, and the left-hander is able to put it up and in. And Jameer Young has his first points in the NBA.
Former Terp Jameer Young, first two, as you heard, Chicago Sportsnet finished with 4 points, a rebound, and 2 assists. So congratulations to you, Jameer Young. So I'm guessing the Bulls lead the NBA in Terps with 3. Mm-hmm. Oklahoma City, they beat L.A., 136, the Lakers, that is, 120. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, 42 points, 6 boards, 6 assists. Aaron Wiggins, speaking of Maryland, 3 points, 4 boards, 2 assists. Is he slowly coming back from that Achilles that cost him almost 2 weeks of playing time? Golden State beat Phoenix, 133-95. Steph Curry had 25. Damian Lee, Calvert-Hall, 8 points, 2 boards for the Phoenix Suns, who are, they're pretty much done. They're 3 games out of the play-in with 3 games left. So, Ishbia came in there with big goals, big pockets, and maybe they're going to be firing another coach here when it's all said and done.
Durant will be leaving.
Who's now like 36. NHL tonight, Caps or tomorrow rather, hosting Carolina, top two teams in the Metro, running, playing out the string in the NHL as well. Carolina's still well behind Washington for the division title and for the President's Cup, but Carolina, you know, trying to get a little status symbol thing going on here.
Yeah, and Bob, it's really not a bad team for the Caps. Carolina's lost three in a row. Carolina's not playing good hockey either. Caps are playing bad hockey right now. We had Joe B talking about it the other day. You know, and because if they had to play today, Montreal's won six in a row, and that's who the Caps would open up with. So the Caps have lost, what, four or five? Montreal's won six in a row. That's not a way that you want to be going in.
And even though Ovi passing Gretzky's in the rearview mirror, the injuries are now becoming real for Washington.
Protas is a big one. And Logan Thompson, the goalie. I mean, doesn't sound like Protas is going to be there for the first round, you know, which could be difficult because, I mean, don't just count on the Caps are just going to go beat Montreal. No, I mean, Montreal is playing pretty damn good. And you know what they are? They're young, and they don't know any better. That's their thing. They're just having fun, and, you know, like the Orioles were a couple years ago. Yeah.
Now the Orioles don't look like they're having fun. but they, it's a whip around Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan. April the 9th, they were having fun on this day, 2014, in the Bronx against the Yankees. Scopolo, three-run homer, paced the Orioles early, and then Nick Markakis and Chris Davis drove in runs in the ninth as the Orioles beat the Yanks 5-4. Brian Mattis, rest in peace, he got the win. Tommy Hunter picked up the save as the Orioles would win the division that year in the American League's eastern side of things. Orioles lose last night 4-3. They've lost Zach Eflin for at least, he's not even throwing for a week. He's on the, let me know what he's pitching. That sort of thing. We'll talk more about that with Jim Hunter, by the way, at 12:30. Our colleague, Baltimore Baseball Tonight, here on 105.7 The Fan. But if you're mad at the Orioles, we'll listen to the event. I don't even think I can push back today. 5-7 through 12 games, not the end of the world, but not exactly where you hoped you would be, and the injuries mounting big time in that rotation. Speaking of that, Zach Kreiser joining us from the Benchwarmers newsletter next here on The Fan. It's the Bandwagon Newsletter. He's on the Window Nation guest hotline. Let's welcome into the program Zach Kreiser. Zach, good morning. Thanks for joining us here in Baltimore. Bob Haney, Vinny Serrato.
Hey, thanks for having me.
All right. 12 in for the Orioles. First, what were your expectations for the team coming into the season? Are they playing to them, below them, or as you expect, you know, injuries have always been a problem here with the rotation going back to last year and in spring training and even more so with Eflin. So your impression of the Orioles based on what you thought they would be right now?
Yeah, I'd say coming into the season, I had the Orioles in a muddled upper tier of the AL East. I think there are three teams you can look at in the AL East and say those teams should make the playoffs. They feel like they should make the playoffs, and maybe it won't happen for all of them, but I think the Orioles, the Yankees, and the Red Sox have rosters that you would say that team should play in October. So far, I'd say the Orioles have played a little to exactly what you'd expect, which is the lineup looks pretty good. Obviously, it's maybe taking a different shape than we expected. We can get into Cedric Mullins versus kind of, you know, Gunnar Henderson's slower start because of injury. But and then the pitching is, I would say, a problem. The starting pitching is a problem. I don't think they did enough to really secure their outlook there. The bullpen looks good, which is not a huge surprise, but the starting pitching is a question. I mean, we had the injury scare with Zach Eflin, and it's like, I don't know what you're looking at if you start to lose the most reliable arm there. Charlie Morton has started to look his age. So I think that's the big question for the Orioles is, can they overpower enough teams with the lineup to make up for what looks like it's going to be a shaky starting rotation, at least until they maybe do something in trade?
Yeah, they've hit two homers in 10 days. But anyway, Zach, you talk about the rotation and not doing enough in the offseason. Well, Orioles offered Corbin Burns 4 years, $180 million. He turned it down. He wanted more years on the contract. And basically, he just wanted to go home. He initiated the contract talks with the D-backs. So that's all water under the bridge. But we're here in Baltimore anyway. A lot of us thought that a Garrett Crochet pursuit probably should have been a little more realistic. Boston winds up getting him. He comes to Baltimore last week and shuts them out on three hits for eight innings. So when you say they should have done more, should it be more via the trade route or take your chances at free agency? I mean, look at Blake Snell in L.A. right now. They gave him dough, and we may not see him pitch for a while.
Right. I think the Orioles have to work a little bit differently than the Dodgers, of course. But, I mean, honestly, the Red Sox are not a bad example of what they maybe could have tried. You know, the Red Sox got Walker Buehler on a one-year deal, and right. He hasn't been amazing, but he is a consistent pitcher with a track record who has upside, which I think is more than you can say about any of the guys the Orioles brought in. They obviously did go out and get Crochet. You know, I think there were options like that. Even a Matt Boyd that the Cubs signed, who flashed some new stuff coming back from injury last year and looks good so far. There were just more mid-market options that, I don't know exactly what was going on in the Orioles front office, but it seems like there were chances to upgrade that didn't have to be Corbin Burnes, didn't have to be Blake Snell. And still would have done a lot for the floor of this pitching staff.
Zach Kreiser, Bandwagon Newsletter, talking to baseball, Orioles, and American League East and beyond here on this Woman Crush Wednesday. Bob Hattie, Vinny Serrato. Staying in the East, and you talk about muddled. I thought Tampa was going to have a hard time competing, and they've lost five in a row, long season, blah, blah, blah. New York, Baltimore, injuries to the rotation, undeniable. We mentioned the Red Sox, but what about Toronto? They were the trendy team for a couple of seasons to win and win big. They made the playoffs twice, fell short, went quietly, as a matter of fact, both years. They do get Vlad done now. Bichette's off to a great start. How scary are the Blue Jays, who will be coming to town this weekend here in the Charm City, by the way, this week?
I will admit I was down on the Blue Jays coming into the season, and I wouldn't say anything about this opening couple weeks has changed my mind, although it's certainly promising that they secured Vlad Guerrero. I think that whatever you think about the dollar amount, which is pretty high for the type of player he is going to be going forward, but having that cloud lifted of just everyone significant on that team was entering free agency or aging, and now they have at least one central pillar to build around, which I think is positive, if nothing else, just for the mood around the team. But I think we still need to see a little more before we're ready to call the Blue Jays in the same tier with the Orioles, Yankees, and Red Sox. I think they do still have a lot of players that are either on the downside of their career or kind of facing prove-it situations, where Alejandro Kirk hasn't really been the same player that we saw a few years ago. And then they have this just collection of kind of younger but not super high prestige prospects who are trying to break into the majors and prove what they can do. And I think we just need to see that shake out. It could be that, you know, they've got a kid named Alan Roden, who is a rookie this year, who looks like he's playing pretty well. It wouldn't surprise me if we look up and he's a 20%, 30% better than league average hitter who they're suddenly plugging into the outfield, and that can make a big difference. But I don't know that we can say for sure they've discovered anything new yet this year.
All right, Zach, teams that have struggled so far this season, real or not real, and I'm not talking about the Rockies or even the Pirates, even because Skeens, he got roughed off a little bit. But, you know, Minnesota 3-8, Mariners 4-8, Braves are 2-8. Of those slow starts for expected contenders, which could be a precursor to a long season here?
I think the Mariners really do have a problem with the offense. I mean, it's sort of the inverse of the Orioles situation, where they just did not do enough to upgrade the lineup around Julio Rodriguez. And out of the two options, I would rather have the Orioles. I think upgrading the pitching or discovering a new pitch, a new idea for one of your arms is a little more realistic than discovering a new bat, which the Mariners need like three of them. And that just seems like a dangerous game they're playing, where they have one of the best rotations in baseball. Those starters are amazing, and they just do not have the support to hit behind them right now. Talking about the Braves, it's certainly a little concerning. Ronaldo Lopez is down for a good long while now, and the offense hasn't totally clicked back into gear. And that is a tough division. I think the Mariners have some wiggle room in that no one seems likely to run away with the AL West, whereas the Braves, that's going to get difficult fast with the Mets and Phillies already playing well as we expected. So I'm a little concerned about the Braves, but I would still not be totally out on them contending.
Hey, Zach, you know, over the first, 11, 13 games here, depending on how many they've played, which team has surprised you thus far? And then is there a player over the first 12, 13 games that has really jumped out at you that's impressed you?
I'll go with the Giants as the team that has surprised me. I think they're playing pretty well. There are some guys who I didn't necessarily have faith in, such as Helio Ramos. Even Matt Chapman had a great year last year, and I wasn't sure how much that would continue given his age, but they've come out of the gate strong, and I like what they're doing with their pitching staff. They seem to discover some new bullpen guys every year. Last year was Ryan Walker. This year it's Randy Rodriguez. And so I'm generally more positive on the Giants after 11 games than I anticipated. A fun guy also in the National League, so Orioles might not get to see quite as much of him, but Victor Scott II, who was a storyline in spring training last year, and really fell flat, didn't hit well, got sent back to the minors. He has won the center field job mostly in St. Louis, and he runs, he hits triples, he steals. And I thought it was really eye-opening that he owned Paul Skenes the other night. He had multiple extra base hits off him, led a Cardinals win. If he can actually maintain anything like this level of hitting, he's going to be a really exciting player. So I would keep an eye out for him.
Zach, tell everybody about the Bandwagon newsletter here in Baltimore.
Happily. My former co-worker, Hannah Kaiser, and I, we have launched the Bandwagon. It's bandwagon.substack.com. It's 3 times a week, and we're talking about baseball to make fans smarter. So we want to help you enjoy the sport, especially maybe on a night where your team isn't doing that hot. Maybe you want to pay attention to something else. Our goal is to really help you enjoy the sport in a smart, informed, and kind of fan-focused way. So we're just getting started. We're about 2.5 weeks in. You can read what we've done for free so far and then decide if you want to sign on to contribute and help us keep the site going. But we'd love to have you and love to have you in the community.
All right, get smarter. That's a challenge here in the Charm City. Zach Kreiser from the Bandwagon Newsletter. Zach, we appreciate the time. Enjoy the rest of your week. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you so much, guys.
There's Zach Kreiser, everybody. It's Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan, Funhouse coming up next. Then we got news from the nest at the top of the hour. Talk more Orioles. Jim Hunter, 12:30. Birds taking on the Diamondbacks, 3:40. Trying to win a series for the first time this season. He's grading. By position, Derek DaCosta's draft since he took over 2019, where they've hit home runs and maybe where they've K'd. Give you an idea, top 10, 10 being the worst, quarterback. Because Ozzie gave him a parting gift called Lamar Jackson.
Thank you.
And Trace McSorley and your boy Leary from last year. So, not like they really needed to draft a quarterback, but they haven't also been able to draft and develop a strong backup to Lamar. Now, Huntley was an undrafted free agent, and they went Josh Johnson, and who's the quarterback? I don't even remember. Who's the backup this year?
They got Cooper Rush.
Cooper Rush. Dallas Cowboys, veteran.
That'll be the best one that Eric has brought. But, I mean, it's not fair to really...
Exactly.
I mean, what round did they take those guys in? Like the seventh
Both
round?
Both went in the sixth.
Yeah. Come on. You know, I mean, you're that's a hope and a prayer.
But that's basically what he's saying.
Yeah.
Come on. I mean, they haven't really needed a quarterback. But in some positions of need, maybe they haven't come through the way that they had hoped for with those selections. So that's coming up next. Buy or sell. Where's the midweek money? Hopefully counting some. Finally. And then Jim Hunter, 12:30, talk about those Orioles. 3:40, Kramer against Plott. Birch trying to win a series as they've lost Eflin probably for, I'm guessing, a month. Those crazy Letizia's injuries. His is only a low-grade one, though, whatever that means. Like his fastball was like 89. That's a low-grade fastball at the end of his outing. But he's been outstanding, the one Orioles starter that has been so far this season. But, Nolan, how you feeling over there?
I'm awake.
Yeah,
just
man.
Barely. Couldn't make it through the entire game last night, and I voiced my displeasure with West Coast baseball on the show already. It was a little while before the Orioles make another West Coast trip, but strange occurrence for me last night. Fell asleep in the seventh or eighth. Actually, it might have been the eighth, because that lengthy review with the whole fiasco in the seventh, I'm sitting there, I'm like, and then finally, when you get to the end, it's like, oh, nothing actually changed. It's just the call on the field. I'm like, what were we talking about for 20 minutes there? Anyway, fell asleep, woke up sometime later. And you know how sometimes you fall asleep, you wake up, it could be 5 minutes past where you dozed off, or it could be 5 hours, you're not sure.
Yeah.
Well, the TV's still on.
Somewhere in between.
Right. Well, I was way out of whack. TV's on, it's on mute. Wake up randomly in the middle of the night, open my eyes, and I see ninth inning, Orioles, and right as I open my eyes, Heston Kerstad grounds into the double play to end the game. So I'm thinking, oh, I just dozed off there, game's over, turned it off. Roll over, look at the alarm clock, it's 3:30 in the morning. That was the replay of the entire game going on. And I'm like, oh my God, I can't do this anymore. So I think we have until June. They'll make another West Coast trip before that, but it lines up with a weekend. So we have until early June before our next late night, weeknight fiasco.
Yeah, I've done that. I've woken up to infomercials a lot.
Or snow. You know, we're just...
Not anymore. I mean...
You got a real problem now.
Yeah, I mean, your cable's out if that happened. But yeah, you wake up, somebody try to sell you a vacuum cleaner, which I'm cool with. But where did the time go? And then you look at the alarm clock. It's like, oh, crap, I got to wake up in a half an hour anyway. It's been 8-8-8-1-0-5-7, the Pet Funhouse.
Quick Draws Funhouse. The rudeness, tuneness text reader.
Who's the fastest gun alive?
This side of the Chesapeake.
Sponsored by the Smile Design Center. Changing the way you feel about dentistry one smile at a time. For information or to schedule an appointment for care, visit them today at smiledesigndoctor.com.
I like that quick draw.
105.7 The Fan.
All right, people, not happy with Tyler O'Neill. We've heard a few callers on it. Texter yesterday, Howard in Baltimore, he got an early jump on it. He's doubling down today. Says O'Neill keeps ending up in the middle of controversy. How do you not go back to second there in the seventh inning? Totally look confused. How did he not see that ball was caught? This guy is proving me right that he's not a good fit for the team. Still not an excuse, though, for the three-ring circus by the umpires last night.
Yeah, Diaz, he's been laughable for many, many years, Laz, and he's always ready to buck up on people, too.
Yeah.
Him and Torrey Lovello, I thought it was going to get WWE, where's John Cena, when you need him. Hey, Mateo ran into, he got caught in a rundown in the ninth inning, too, so your pinch runner. That's speed, man. Only way he's getting on base is if he's pinch running for someone and kind of take advantage of the opportunity. But I said it yesterday, and I'll say it again. Heston Kerstad, let's see some of that power. And it seems like he's consciously trying to hit it the other way. Hit 500-foot home runs to the left. Beat Joey Gallo. Do your thing. Maybe don't strike out 5 bazillion times, but, you know, let's see that power that we've been hearing about for many, many moons here.
More on O'Neill here, this one on his defense. Texter says the other night in Kansas City looked like he had never played the outfield before. Checked up on 2 balls that really should have been caught. Last night, obviously killing the inning with the double play and then the not tagging up situation. This guy is killing the team right now.
It's funny because after opening day, he was Frank Robinson.
Ticeps.
Yeah, Ticeps. Now he's a guy that everyone hates and they want Tony Taters back. But Brandon Hyde said to the media last Wednesday, O'Neill's more comfortable in right, even though he won 2 gold gloves and left. I mean, if he's comfortable, I mean, you're the manager. But I kind of think you're better in left. So how about we get comfortably ahead on the scoreboard and you help that call?
And one last one here, this one football related. Eric in Elkton with a draft question. Says, Vinny, in your experience with draft night trades, when you're talking on the phone with other teams, what is going down in those conversations? Are you asking them who they're going to pick with said traded selection to make sure that they're not stealing a guy from you? Take us inside those convos.
Nobody will ever tell you that. That's not happening. Usually what it is if our guy is not there, I'll call you back, you know, and then we'll do it. If our guy's there, we're just going to make the pick. So if you don't hear back from me, that was our guy.
We're done. At least for this hour. We'll come back. News from the Nest. Going to talk more about Jeff's story in the Athletic, breaking down the Eric DaCosta era in the draft, where he's done well and where they've struggled. And again, quarterback, come on, man. They don't need one of those. You're just trying to draft maybe a long-term backup that could help you break glass in case of emergency. And then we'll break that down a little bit more, no pun intended. More draft profiles coming up at 12:45. Buy or sell 12:15. Jim Hunter at 12:30. Orioles are 5-7. Should we be pushing panic buttons yet? I think with the injuries in the rotation, I'm staring at it.